And good evening. It is Intuitive Soul Radio with your host, Lori Houston. And this is the second portion of our evening where I get to interview an author. And tonight's author is one of our favorites on Intuitive Soul Radio. It's Robert Bruce. And we're going to discuss a re-release, a 10th edition re-release to a revised edition of Astral Dynamics, the complete book of out-of-body experiences. So, welcome, Robert.
G'day, Lori.
You know, it's always a pleasure to talk to you. I think we have some very interesting conversations. We were going to talk a little bit. I know we sort of mentioned it briefly about, you know, this is a new year, and 2010, a lot of people, you know, last year was kind of a crazy year, but this year seems to be a bit gentler and maybe a little bit easier. And I wanted to, you know, to talk to you because I know you have your own idea of what this whole time thing moving up to 2012 is all about. So why don't you talk about it?
I don't usually talk about this to any great extent. A lot of people seem fixated on round numbers. 2012, and I think another one's come out recently, 2018, and a lot of it is doom and gloom. The end of the world, bad things are going to happen. And I've been listening to these dates since the 1970s. There was 1982, I think it was, or 1984, and a string of dates where the end is nigh. And I think this is creating a lot of negative manifestation in the world, which is actually making things worse. Whereas from what I know about manifestation and how the process works, to manifest a bright, happy future for the world, we all need to think about having a bright, happy future where we solve all our problems and the world becomes a better place. These dates come and go, and 2012 and 2018 will come and go just like any of these other dates. I'm clairvoyant. I've looked into the future many, many times. I don't see anything major happening on these dates.
Well, we lost you a little bit there, if you can try and clear that up.
Right, yeah. I don't see anything major happening on these particular dates in 2012 or 2018.
Right.
Like past dates which have come and gone where people have, 1982 was a big one, I think, where there were supposed to be big changes, but nothing happened. And dates like this come and go. And I'd like to reassure people that this date, 2012, will come and go and life will go on.
Right.
You know, bad's going to happen to the world.
You know, I totally agree with that. I think, you know, there is a lot of doom and gloom speculation out there about 2012. And I don't think anything like that's going to happen. I too have looked into the future and, you know, from what I see, things go quite smoothly. But, you know, there has to be something that explains some of the way the energies have been. They seem to be much quicker right now. There seems to be an intensity to, you know, the energies and how things are moving very quickly. And so there is something that is going on. And I do think there is an alignment with the planet. And I do think there are some things that, you know, whether it's, you know, coming into the center of the Milky Way, and that's how some people are explaining it. And, you know, there is something that is going on because clearly we are, you know, the energies do seem to be much more intense. And you know, anything that we're avoiding and not looking at is right in our face. And, you know, I think there's been a lot of healing and a lot of growth.
I fully agree with you, Lori, but I don't think it is the way people think it is going to be.
Right.
To use an old-fashioned term, the veil between the worlds is thinning. Between here and the spiritual worlds, the veil is getting thinner. And this has happened at other times in history, and I think there are astrological factors involved. I don't understand astrology, but I think there are astrological factors involved. because the planets and stars have massive effects upon our lives.
Right.
And this is, you know, very obvious to me. But the dates 2012, 2018, I mean, this is based on the Mayan calendar, mm-hmm. I think, look at these current dates here. But the experts don't even agree on that. It was originally 2012 and now it's 2018. But and I don't think they really understand it. The calendar ends. Now, why does it end? It just ends. It doesn't say, you know, there's no message there saying it ends here because the world ends and there's no point going on. It ends. I mean, if you create a calendar for any purpose, it has to have a beginning and an end. You can't have an infinite calendar.
Mm-hmm.
So it may just be coincidental. I mean, and the power of people had thought, I mean, back in 1900, I mean, humans have a fascination with round numbers, and it doesn't take a lot to put a date in the mind of a collective consciousness. When it turned 1900, it was...
Sorry, you're getting a little fuzzy. Just try and clear that up.
Okay, how's that?
That better.
Yeah, when it turned 1900, it was also believed then that the world was going to end. It was the end times. And but when 1900 came, nothing happened. But that year, a lot of farmers had not planted crops because they so believed it was the end of the world, they thought, why bother? And shortly after that, there was a widespread food shortage. And people were saying, see, the end times are starting. I mean, the food shortage was because farmers didn't plant enough crops, but it wasn't a major thing. But and this is what's going to happen again. I've looked into the future many, many years, and I see some big changes, responsible for evolution. And, you know, the evolution of society. But I don't see any doom and gloom particular dates where the world is going to end. Mm-hmm. I mean, things will get better. I mean, global warming may even go away.
Yeah.
The power of manifestation here, if you have enough people who do not believe that global warming is going to, you know, ruin our planet, then it will change.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and all of a sudden, there's no global warming.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can change anything if enough people think positively about something, it can change. I mean, a lot of people I meet too, they also seem to think that these dates where you get these big changes, governments will collapse and more spiritual people will be put into power. But if you look upon what that would involve, it's like horrific. Our society is so delicately balanced. I mean, the technology and life and how we live it, that you know, the slightest change like that would be a horrific time. There'd be nothing happy about it. Mm. Maybe afterwards, but anyway, I don't see anything like that happening. Not on these particular dates, or in no time in the future. I mean, humanity has lived through some really rough times. If you look at the last 200 years, just for an example, two major wars and, you know, massive disasters and earthquakes and that, but life lives, you know, we live through them, we overcome them, we hopefully learn from them, and life goes on.
Mm-hmm. No, I totally agree. I think definitely we're changing, and I think there's a lot of things that are going to be here to assist us, to help us through this change, and I think, but I agree. I know that there's nothing catastrophic that's going to happen, or that, you know, the world will end, or, you know, we'll lose. I think there are going to be some interesting things happen. I also think that this whole global warming thing has been, you know, a way to, you know, make money and create fear. I think, you know, as some people say, the Earth just goes through cycles, and we're in a cycle of warming, and then we will go into a cycle of cold again. And I don't know that, you know, our automobiles or some of the things, I do agree that we're hurting our planet, but I don't think that we're hurting the planet as much as we're being told we are.
Yeah, probably not. But I think regardless of, you know, how real global warming is, and as you say, there's money and fear, and there's so many corporations and power groups behind these things. I mean, it's very difficult to ascertain the actual truth, but regardless of that, I mean, we do need to be more responsible on this planet and to create less pollution and to be more conservative with our energies.
Yeah. No, absolutely. And find better ways and better ways for energy instead of the, you know, having certain countries, you know, have manipulate and control us with the fuel source. But yeah, absolutely. There are things that we need to do to change how we are polluting our oceans and our lakes. And yeah, there's lots that we need to do. We need to become much more conscious and aware.
Yeah, those sort of things are, you know, they're quite urgent that we do need to stop polluting. I think that's probably the major problem. If you look at the oceans and the wildlife around the planet, and that they're telling us a very sad tale that things are not right. Mm-hmm. And a lot of it is greed, and you know, people are very, very greedy, and money is behind it. And of course, it's going to cost everybody a lot more money to repair these things, and a lot of effort. But I think they can be done. Mm-hmm. We can do anything if we put our minds to it. But as I said a moment ago, the veil between the worlds is thinning. You find psychic abilities are becoming a lot more common in people. Paranormal phenomena is becoming more and more common. Everything is, something is happening and changing in that sense, psychically, if not spiritually.
Yeah, for sure. So, you re-released Astral Dynamics, and it came out, I guess, at the end of 2009. And, you know, there were some changes. So let's talk a little bit about, you know, why did you come out with a new edition?
Well, the new edition came about as a result of a dinner with my publisher, publishing editor, Frank DeMarco. He's a good friend of mine. And I was in Virginia Beach last year doing a workshop at the Edgar Cayce Foundation at the ARE. I did a three-day conference there. It's a wonderful conference, lovely people there. And the idea came up, and so I did the revision, and revision is an understatement. It's a completely new book. And I'm holding it in my hand now, smiling. They did an absolutely beautiful job on it. And I completely replaced the book. I had a very short time to do it in, but apart from replacing all the artwork and upgrading everything, it is like half the size of the book it used to be. It was originally close to 600 pages, and now it's more like 350 pages. I suppose that shows that apart from taking a lot of padding out of it, I tended to repeat myself a little bit in the original edition, which is a teaching style. But my teaching style's improved a lot since then. But I've also, my experience with these things, with astral projection, energy work, and my work with manifestation particularly, has come a long way in the last decade since I wrote this book originally. And so that I needed to make a lot of changes to update it to my current thought. And the book is much more effective, and the techniques are better inside of it. So it makes the book a lot more accessible in that sense. And it's absolutely wonderful. I love reading it now again. So but one of the main changes in there is my use of manifestation, which is an interest I've had over the last few years. Not an interest, it's more of a growth curve for me. And I use manifestation and affirmations and intention in this book here for producing, developing the ability to have astral projections and lucid dreamings. And it's very, very effective. And manifestation, of course, I'm sure you're familiar with, based upon the release of The Secret, there was a greatly renewed interest in manifestation around the world since then. And a very, very powerful method when you combine it particularly with the energy work that I teach and astral projection methods. It's like a missing piece of a jigsaw puzzle that makes it work very, very well. And yeah.
Yeah. So let's talk, I guess, I mean, I don't know where we want to start, but you know, the book is on out of body experiences. A lot of people have them. A lot of people want to try and get them. A lot of people, why is it what is your fascination about out of body experiences? I believe it's because you think when doing them, you can connect deeper and create more. But tell me what's your passion about out of body?
I started having astral projections, as we talked about in another interview, mm-hmm. about the age of 3 or 4 years of age. And did I tell you the story about when I first had my original out-of-body experiences?
I'm not sure, probably, but go ahead and tell it again, because it's always good to
There's a little story behind it. I don't think I told you. I had, around about 3 years of age, I was having a series of awake paralysis episodes where I would awaken at night or be trying to go to sleep, and this buzzing sensation would come over me. And it was like a high-pitched, fizzy type of buzzing through my whole body, and I'd be paralyzed. And this happened a lot, and it frightened me. I was only a little lad at the time. And one time this happened not long before I was 4 years of age, and I was paralyzed. And as usual, there was a bright light coming from above my right-hand side above my head. And this one time, I only ever did this once because I was too afraid to do it after that. I turned around and looked at the source of this light. Now, I now know that I didn't physically move because I was paralyzed. This is sleep paralysis. Awake sleep paralysis. And I turned to my right, and I'm moving my astral body, and my second body, as Robert Monroe called it, inside of my physical body. And I looked above my right shoulder, and sitting beside me was a large extraterrestrial, a human size, quite large. It looked like a large insect with a big triangular head and large eyes. And in front of it had a large ball of light about the size of a basketball that was throbbing. And I looked at it, and the ET looked at me, touched the ball of light, and I passed out.
That faded out a wee bit. Can you repeat that? Try and hold the energy so we can get this nice and clear.
Okay. I looked around, and sitting beside me was an extraterrestrial, an ET. And it was an insect-looking thing about the size of a human with a big triangular head and big eyes. And it had a look of the body with like a praying mantis. And in front of it was a ball of light about the size of a basketball. Now, I looked at it, and of course I was shocked. I was only a little guy. And it noticed me looking at it. And it touched the ball of light, and I passed out.
Mm.
Now, after that, several months after that, when I was 4 years of age, I started to have astral projections. And I think these things are connected. And the ET and the paralysis episodes with the vibrations I used to feel, call them vibrations now, it was a buzzing paralysis feeling, I think they're connected. Because then I started having astral projections, and I would go to bed and relax a little bit, and I'd just float out of my body. And originally I floated out feet first as if I was laying in bed still and floated around the house. And this happened every night for years. And, you know, in that process of that time, I learned how to get around, how to fly, and become a lot more comfortable with it, and had a lot of fun as a little guy playing in the astral. But the important thing here is I think the ET did something to me, and the buzzing, hissing feeling that I felt, vibrating feeling when I was paralyzed had something to do with it. Now, jump forward years later, and several years ago, I was doing a workshop at the Monroe Institute in Virginia. And I was visiting there, and a friend of mine, one of the outreach trainers, Maureen Callahan, was giving us a mini gateway, a one-day gateway introduction to Hemish and all the state through Binaural Beats. And we put on these headphones and played these altered state producing sounds, Hemisync. And the moment I put them on and felt the effect of the Hemisync sound on me, I knew what it was, because it was very similar to the buzzing, hissing sound that I used to feel in my body when I was a little guy in the awake paralysis episodes, which seems to be caused by this extraterrestrial. And so I have to say that whatever was done to me at that early age was using some kind of high-tech hemisync applied to me, possibly through the astral dimension. When I was very, very young, and it altered me. And if I look at my life, look back on my life now, I can see how this altered me and how the enormous amount of experiences I have with astral projection are linked to that and where it's led me today. I'm now writing books on these things and continuing to explore and research and, you know, find new methods to make astral projection easier and better. And it's a passion of mine. And astral projection is still one of the not most interesting things anybody could possibly do, I think.
Right. It does. I mean, that's fascinating experiences. Most people don't have anything very close to that. Have you figured out, you know, what the ET was? I mean, you think that they were helping you achieve and get into your into the gifts that you are, but that for most people would be pretty scary.
It was scary at the time, Laurie. I don't know the answers to these questions because I've had very little contact with, extraterrestrials. Mm. I encounter them occasionally in the astral, but I tend to avoid them. I was physically abducted once, though, going back many years ago. And that may or may not be related to those events of an early day. And this happened about, 20 years ago, 18, 20 years ago. And I was in company. I was with my mother, and we were visiting an old friend, which we did every Thursday night. And we, the three of us sat in a meditation group together in the evening. And there was myself, my mother, and a lady called Selena, who was an old English medium of the old school, a very dear lady. And one night we went there as usual. I didn't check the time when we left, but it was usually around about 11 or 12. I mean, Selena was in her 80s, and, my mother was getting on, and I had, work the next day usually. And anyway, it was a 35-minute drive from Selena's place to my home, and part of that, about 10 minutes of that trip, was through the forest, the wilderness. And this one night, I was driving home, and ahead on the right in the trees, I saw a massive light burst into light behind the trees. And my mother, we were animatedly talking about something. I think she was talking about Atlantis or something. And she was, almost across the car into my lap, looking at this thing, and you could see the light moving, and it was moving upwards towards the top of the tree because these fingers of light were pouring through the trees. It was a very powerful light, and at the time I was trying to think what could cause a light that bright. It was incredible, like nothing I'd ever seen. And I was doing, at the time, 55 miles an hour. My hands were on the wheels, my window was down. My mother was halfway across the car looking at this light, gasping, saying, "What's that?" My foot came off the accelerator as we, got close to it. And just as the light started to crest the top of the tree, I just got a glimpse of the light. There's like a little falling sensation in my memory. And a split second later, my hands are on the wheel. I'm sitting straight. My window's up. My foot's back on the accelerator. I'm doing exactly 55 miles an hour. It's dark. My mother is sitting beside me, not halfway across the car, looking at this light. She's sitting with her hands on her lap, looking straight ahead. And I looked around at my mother as if I'd just woken up, even though I was driving. And I said, "Mum," I said, "what the hell was that?" And she said, "What, dear?" I said, "That massive light that just came through the trees." And she said, "I don't know, dear." And went back to gazing straight ahead, like she wasn't interested. Well, that's not my mum. Mum was interested in everything. And very animated. And I drove home in silence for the next 15 minutes until it took us to get home. And I remember my stomach was feeling a bit uncomfortable and it was growling a little bit, which I felt was a bit strange because not long before we left Selena's house, we had a substantial meal. And I got home and I discovered the reason why my stomach was growling. It was almost 5 o'clock in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
Now, no matter how much you stretch this, there's approximately at least 4 hours of time missing. Let's say, you know, I had a really late night there and left, the latest ever, and I left at, say, 1 o'clock in the morning. And still, almost 5 o'clock, there's still 4 hours missing. And, yeah, I never found an explanation for that. I've tried everything to push my memories back and recover those memories. And I've made a little progress in that area, but it's almost like the memory is time. Something's blocking it. But I have an intuitive feeling that one day I'll get that memory back. Mm. But I cannot get that memory back until a particular time in my life. But it'll be necessary. But, yeah, a fascinating time. My mother remembered it all of her life up until the time she died in 2002. And I would often ask her about that. Do you remember that time in the car? And she remembers the light and she remembers the time loss and that. And she'd shake her head and she was never really interested in that, which was very unusual for my mother. You know, she was never very excited about it. I always changed the subject.
Mm. Wow, that is really interesting. Wow, I can't imagine. But
I've seen a lot of big UFOs in my life. When I was young, in my 20s, I was in the Merchant Navy. And around the time of Cyclone Tracy here, which I think was about 1973, I think it was, I was 18, my ship was up off the coast of Darwin. And on the trip in, this is a trip just before the cyclone hit, so it's about 4 weeks before Cyclone Tracy destroyed the town of Darwin. I was on the 12 to 4 watch. It was about 2 o'clock in the morning, and I was up on the bridge with the third mate keeping lookout. It was a beautiful night, lovely flat seas, and a beautiful full moon. And I'm looking up, and I see this something like a meteor coming there. It wasn't a meteor. It was like an asteroid. But it came down slowly, and the third mate came out on the bridge, and we were watched it come down. And this asteroid had a bright blue glowing aura around it, very, very clear. It looked like it was made of iron with pockmarks in it, like you'd imagine an asteroid. But and this was a much, much larger than our ship was. It was a very, very big thing. And it came down decelerating and entered the water about half a mile off our port bow and slipped gently into the water with hardly a ripple. And the third mate and I were sitting there with our jaws dropping. I mean, you don't see anything like that very often. And then there was a big glow coming from under the water, and then the glow in the water moved off at high speed in another direction and disappeared. And the third mate said to me, you know, he recommended I didn't tell anybody about it because we often see things like that, you know, on the night shift watch on a ship when you're out at sea. But a few hours later, we were tying up the ship in the port of Darwin, and I was thinking about it was like a big spaceship coming down. We'd seen a few hours earlier, and I was looking at the sea. It was just on the grey of dawn, and I saw another one come down in the distance exactly the same money, much further away, with a big blue aura around it, coming down about the same angle. And I don't know what that was, but I had a friend of mine, a talented remote viewer, did a remote viewing on that, and they picked up that it was full of seawater. It contained a number of extraterrestrials in a little air pocket in the front, and it was bringing down something which she described could only be a whale.
Huh.
It's bringing a whale down to the planet. I don't know how true that is. I mean, this remote viewer was very, very good at what she did. And so you have to think to yourself, why would something that big be coming down to our planet quite openly? I mean, it didn't try to hide or anything. You know, a ship that big, there's only one purpose for it, and that's like a cargo ship. It's got to be carrying something. I mean, it's too big just to be carrying a few people down.
Wow.
Just a bit of logic there. But, yeah, I've seen things like that in my life. I don't have any explanation or contact with extraterrestrials per se. So, you know, the whole thing is still a mystery to me. And I don't like to jump to conclusions about things. I like to, you know, get some personal experience on these things and live it rather than try and work it out.
Hmm. Yeah, that's interesting. And so, because a lot of people, when they do astral travel, they tend to go into dimensions that are not all dimensions are human, so that there are some people that go into dimensions that are extraterrestrial or, you know, from other planets. And I take it that's not been part of your exploration.
Yep, I've had astral projections and lucid dreams very much like that, where I've been taken to other worlds or visited other worlds, where there have been, you know, extraterrestrial people there that are not human. And I've had experiences where I've been on a couple of very large spaceships up in orbit of the Earth, but I still don't understand it.
okay, fair enough.
I had one astral projection I'll tell you about. Where I it was more like an astral projection. It was more like an astral abduction, I would have to say. Where I was like taken out of my body. My astral body was, you could say, escorted to a very large spaceship that was orbiting the Earth. And on this spaceship, there was talking to people who are humanoid but not human. And there were hundreds of humans there, sitting like in a theatre situation around a very large ball of glowing light that reminded me of that basketball-sized glowing light in my experience when I was 3 or 4 years of age. And the gentleman who was showing me around told me that they were abducting the astral bodies of people during sleep, and they were socially reprogramming them to help the transition of humanity from a low technology, low level of civilization, the transition to a higher level of civilization. And the process was they would abduct many, many people every night and implant ideas and feelings and trends into people to help this transition.
Well, that is interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Yeah. We're in interesting times. I mean, I don't doubt that that's probably something that has been occurring. I think that that's probably, you know, something that is quite valid. And I do think that there are lots out there that are there, you know, really furthering our evolution rather than, you know, creating any fear or trying to control us.
Yeah, definitely. So I don't have a lot to do with it extraterrestrial, so I try to avoid them. But I think there's one thing that, through observation, I can see there appears to be multiple factions of extraterrestrials at work in our world, and some of them do appear to be helping us to transition to a higher level of consciousness and civilization. So it's possible that they say they are trying to help us.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look at the world today, I mean, I think we could use all the help we could get. you know, globally. I think left to our own devices, I mean, well, perish the thought.
Yes. Well, okay, so let's touch on some of the things that you really are familiar with, which is, you know, you, in the book, one of your biggest changes was that you talk more about your higher self. So let's talk about that.
Yeah, your higher self is a part of you. You could call it a divine aspect of yourself. You at a much, much higher level. And this level of you, which we call the higher self, is at a higher and more abstract level of consciousness. It would be difficult to, it is difficult to communicate with this level of ourselves directly by talking. So we use a process called manifestation, where we use intention and thoughts and particularly affirmations to communicate our, you could say, our desires for change to our higher self. And the higher self is, apart from being this godlike being inside of you, which is also you, is also your best friend. It is very interested in your life and your development and your experiences in life. And it will help you if you ask. Now, some of the things I've learned about affirmations is verbal affirmations are much, much more powerful than silent affirmations. I don't know how much, 10 times stronger, 100 times stronger, I would say, far stronger. And the only reason I can put to that is that the spoken word, the voice, activates the throat chakra. And the throat chakra is in tune with the astral dimension, and it projects the voice into the astral dimension. Now, your higher self is much more active in the astral dimension and much more proactive and receptive there. So I think that's how the process works. And you can get a handle on your higher self. You can almost meet your higher self in an astral projection or a lucid dream. If you come out of your body or become aware in the lucid dream, if you make a command, call out and say something, say, take me home, or take me to the Eiffel Tower, or take me to a person, and you will feel a giant hand grab you. And this, a giant hand like force will grab you and start moving you in the astral towards where you want to go. And if you keep focused on your direction, for example, if you say, take me to Robert Bruce, for example, you want to visit me in the astral, a hand will grab you, a force, and it's like being a hamster and being picked up by a giant human sort of feeling, but it doesn't hurt. And it starts moving you in the direction of where you have requested to go. And if you keep your mind focused on where you want to go, you will travel through the astral and you will arrive at your destination. But most people don't do that. Our minds flit around here and there. And my experiences with that, my first one, I wanted to visit a friend of mine who was in hospital and I wanted to give her some healing. And so I made a command. I said, take me to Taran. And this giant hand grabbed me and started moving me through real time, which is like through the real world. And then as I moved out of my home and moved across the parkland opposite there, I looked at this tree that had been cut down during the day and, you know, just focused on it for a moment. And the hand, the force dropped me there looking at the tree. And the feeling I got was, it's almost like it said, oh, you want to look at the tree? Here you go. And so I thought about that for a moment. I restated my command, take me to Taran. And this force gripped me again, started off we go again, and started moving again towards where she was, which was about 40 miles away. And I looked at something else, and it dropped me down again to look at some roadworks. And, oh, want to look at the roadworks? And it sort of stop-start sort of journey. Through this stopping and starting, every time I looked at something or paid it attention, it would stop and I'd look at that. Wherever my focus and the attention went, I was dropped there. And I got the idea after a while that I had to keep a focus on where I wanted to go, and the force would take me directly there. And it did. And I've experimented a lot, and eventually it dropped me next to Taryn, who was sitting there having a cup of tea in her hospital room. And I gave her some healing and that, and helped her as best I could. But many experiences with this force have shown me how the process of manifestation works. And I'm sure you can see the similarities here now. If you're trying to manifest something, you need to keep a very strong focus on what you're trying to manifest, and use affirmations and intentions and visualizations and affirmations. You're affirming. Let's say you're trying to get a new job. You would focus on the particular job you want, and you'd imagine yourself working in this new job, and you'd say affirmations, and the affirmations would reflect that you already have this job, not that you're going to get it. That's in the future. But the importance of manifestation here is that you need to keep your focus on your goal as much as possible, because as soon as you take your focus off of it, your manifestation energy goes in a different direction. It's just like when you're in the astral, if you want to go somewhere, you have to keep your focus on your destination once you've made a command, an affirmation, to be taken somewhere. If your focus flickers off of that for even a moment, you'll stop and be dropped somewhere else. And the real world with manifestation, the same principle applies. And anyway, through studying these things and practicing them, I've learned that you know how they work. Now, these things I'm telling you now are not new. Manifestation's been studied a lot, and if you watch the DVD The Secret, they talk about these same things. But living it and the astral connection I found of using affirmation and command to the astral brings it home to you how it works. And the realization through personal experience of how it works, of course, makes the process work more powerfully. So when you try and manifest something, it works more strongly.
Mm-hmm. So how important then is it setting your intention? I mean, this is the thing, is that typically we go through our day and we let our day sort of live through us instead of us sort of trying to be in charge of our life and creating the experience we want. We just sort of live, we let life live us instead of us living life.
Yeah, if you don't set a serious intention and you don't actually focus on the target, I mean, you need to be specific to manifest anything, very as specific as possible. And that focuses all of your energies and the energies of your higher self, which for all intents and purposes is directly linked to the creation of the universe. So there's massive creative powers at work there. And the only limit to our ability to use this manifestation power is our beliefs in how much we will allow them to work. And your beliefs depend a lot in this sense on personal experience, and nothing else will do. I mean, you cannot intellectually accept manifestation. You have to live it and gain experience for it. But, focusing on a goal is like, as I was saying, in the astral dimension, when you're focusing on being moved to a particular area in real time, you need to keep that focus 100%. Otherwise, you get distracted. Mm-hmm. And like in real life, we'll think about doing something and then we get distracted and called away to make dinner or to go and visit somebody. The telephone rings and we get distracted all the time. So our energies are very fragmented, and the majority of people, of course, don't have a great deal of success with manifestation because of that. People who work in the higher levels of business and that, who know how manifestation works and setting intentions and goals works, are a lot more disciplined on setting intentions and goals, and therefore a lot more successful because of that. But it is a discipline that we have to learn.
Mm-hmm. And you know, I mean, even when we do our meditation or we do our prayer, I mean, we're you know, our focus is there, and then all of a sudden we start thinking about something else, and of course our focus goes there. So when we are thinking about manifesting things, I mean, how much of a clear focus and how for how long? I mean, do you have any idea? And also, I hear what you were saying is that, you know, it's really important to use our voice when we're setting or making an affirmation and intention.
Yeah, I often get asked this, how long per day should I spend doing affirmations? Now, verbal affirmations, of course, are more powerful. So the first thing I advise people is to spend as much time as they can per day when they're alone, verbalizing their affirmations and their intentions powerfully. Make good use of driving time and alone time and waiting time for this. But how much you should do, it depends a lot on how much you want what you're going to manifest. I was working with a year ago with a man who's become a friend of mine who had a serious problem and a medical problem. Mm-hmm. And he had varicose veins in the testicles. And he'd had this for several years, and it was a very painful condition, and he had to take drugs and painkillers for it, and he was facing some fairly high-risk surgery, unpleasant things to do. It's quite a serious condition. And I was talking to him, and he asked me the same question. I got him all motivated up to set the intention, and we phrased the affirmations of, you know, his skin would clear and the varicose veins wouldn't be there. That is, you know, this part of his body was perfect. And he said, how long should I do this every day? And I said, how much do you want to get better? And he said, a lot. I'm so tired of this condition. I said, okay, 16 hours a day.
Whoa.
He said, you're kidding. I said, how much do you want to get better? He said, a lot. Now, I'd really pumped this guy up and really motivated him. And he said, I'll do it. He got all passionate about it. Now, he had a few days off coming to him, starting the next day, and he started doing verbal affirmations. He took the telephone off the hook and focused on this. And even though he didn't have the belief to back it up, I said, walk the walk, do the affirmations, and focus on this 100%. And he did it for 3 days. He was going hoarse doing the affirmations. And he woke up on the fourth day, and his body was perfect. Huh. The condition had completely disappeared. It was an absolute miracle. Now, miracles like this are absolutely possible if you put the work into it. You can heal anything. I've been working with many people since then, doing the same sort of thing, getting them to a point where they actually put a lot of work into it. And everyone that does this gets results. Some people get miracles. Some people get good improvements. And it depends a lot on how much work you put into it. There's a definite relationship between the hours you put in, the passion, the intensity with what you do it, the accuracy with which you phrase your affirmations and how you hold your intentions. And it's a formula, an equation there. It absolutely works. It's like magic. Hmm. And you have to do it. You have to live it. Now, as they say in The Secret, this has to be through personal experience. You cannot intellectually accept a manifestation that it works. It just sounds so far-fetched. It sounds like imagination, like children's talk, like wishing for something, and it is. But and you have to start by walking the walk and pretending and making it up and trying to do it. And you have to let your beliefs, you know, your personal experience catch up with you. Now, every success you have when manifesting something, your beliefs shift a little bit and you gain a bit of personal experience. So like they do in The Secret DVD, they start with something small, manifesting a cup of coffee or a dinner invitation or something quite achievable. Then you do that and you focus on that and you have a success and you think, oh, could be coincidence. And you do it again and again and again, manifesting lots of small things. And over a period of time, you gather and gain personal experience, and your personal experience changes your beliefs and in a very, very powerful way. Now, over a period of time, as you this gets stronger and stronger through personal experience, you literally begin to gain creative ability where you can alter. This is pure magic. This is the essence of magic and witchcraft and how the ritual works. You know, when you are using ritual magic or whether you're using witchcraft you're doing these things to bring about an effect, to bring about change, a result. Now, these are disciplined ways of using intention and affirmation and rituals, ways of phrasing intention. And it's a dramatized, empowered ways of doing simple manifestation. And these things are known to work, but the essence of it is simple manifestation. Setting your intention, setting your mind on something, a goal very clearly, and then focusing on that goal, verbalizing it, you doing affirmations on it, visualizing it, imagining it, walking the walk, and also taking action to bring this about. In most cases, when you're doing manifestation, apart from doing the first steps by setting the goal and doing the affirmations here, you also have to be vigilant. You have to keep watch because life, your higher self, which is connected to all life around you, will try to bring you the information you need to lead you to whatever it is you're trying to manifest. And you will get information from all sources, from friends, from televisions. It'll just pop into your head. A magazine you'll find left at a doctor's surgery, anything at all, will try to bring the information for you that you need to to fulfill your goal. So you need to be vigilant, and it's a bit like a paper chase in that sense. Here, it sounds a bit crazy, and most people think, you know, I can't do that. That's just crazy. That's just silly. It's like a bit childish, you know, going out and doing that sort of thing. But you think about it, letting go, being like a child, believing like a child, totally, 100% in what you're doing, and allowing yourself to play and to just do something. It's getting your intellect out of the way and the logic and the reasoning out of the way and to just allow something to happen and to work with the process.
Yeah, I think, you know, we get, you know, we hear these things, we want to believe them, but we, you know, again, life sort of catches us up. We don't get an opportunity to, you know, really walk our talk, and we don't get an opportunity to really hold that energy because we get caught up and we're not as focused, or, you know, we get interrupted and we're focusing and then, you know, something else will catch our attention, we'll focus on that, and then we'll bring ourselves back. And, you know, it's an interesting thing. So I'm also guessing that if we do it through, you know, astral travel or an out-of-body experience and in the different dimensions, that could help us achieve it even quicker.
Yes, definitely. As I said, the higher self is much more receptive and proactive on the astral level, and anything you do on the astral level is far more powerful than if you do it in your physical body. So if you get out of body, if you do your affirmations and commands and setting intentions and visualizing your goals there, it will have a much more dramatic impact in real life, empowering what you are trying to manifest. Another aspect of this, which is, I don't see anybody using this today at all, but in order to develop psychic abilities and spiritual development, affirmations and manifestation work just as well on that. This is the missing link. The key to setting goals and intentions for manifesting psychic abilities in yourself and spiritual development is also greatly empowered through affirmations and manifestation. The same principles apply. Mm-hmm. I mean, and if you think about this, every human being is born with perfect psychic abilities, but we have a lot of natural filters which block these things off in order to keep us grounded in the physical dimension. which is natural. I mean, we have to live here. And if we were having clairvoyant visions all the time, seeing astral beings and auras, it would grossly interfere with normal life in the real world. We wouldn't be able to function very well. So we have natural filters with these things. But, of course, when you are trying to manifest psychic abilities, you need to be able to let these filters go. And one of the best ways to do that is through affirmations and manifestation. And if you work on these same things here. I've helped people to do this over the years. And, like, for example, a lady I was helping who was a dedicated healer and had been for almost 40 years. And she'd always longed to be clairvoyant, to see auras and that. And I worked with her for a couple of days and convinced her of what I'm telling you about here now. And I went to bed and she stayed up all night doing affirmations and focusing on she wanted to manifest clairvoyance in herself. And the next morning I woke up about 9 o'clock and we're out on the front lawn having a cup of coffee and she nearly dropped her cup of coffee. She said, "Robert, I can see your aura." And it was that fast. She, overnight, she manifested the ability to see auras. Mm-hmm. And she's very, very happy with that. But and it, these things can come on that quickly. But a little bit of care is recommended with manifesting psychic abilities. It's these things are best approached slowly, one step at a time. I mean, if you've never been clairvoyant, you would not want to turn on a switch and become 100% clairvoyant immediately because it takes some getting used to.
Sort of be careful what you ask for.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, yeah, you want to take a few years getting used to it and start with auras and an occasional vision and work in, you know, seeing an occasional spirit and things like that and work your way up to it. Get used to it. And every time, when you're comfortable with what you've got now, then move on a little bit more. Otherwise, it can be quite fear-inducing and destabilizing, and it can really mess with your life.
Now, do you believe, there are some people out there that believe this, but do you believe then that we can have access to all of the gifts? Because I think, you know, typically, I think we're all very unique and we have a unique way of experiencing the world. And so, you know, for some, it's clairsentience or claircognizance or clairaudience or clairvoyancy. But, you know, we have this unique, we already have a unique gift of experiencing the world. And I always tell people to sort of, you know, foster that. It's not going to be the same as with everybody else. But I think from what you're saying is that if we wanted to bring on clairvoyancy, you know, it would be, you know, setting the intention and using those affirmations to do that.
Yeah, definitely. You're right in what you say. We all have a set of filters around our chakras and psychic abilities that we and spiritual abilities that we have, which kind of block them off. Now, depending on the individual makeup of a person, you find there are these filters vary. The default, you could say, the default settings of these filters. So we tend to be naturally talented in certain areas. Much like a person may be naturally talented at artwork and other people don't have any natural talent. For example, I'm a I'm a naturally a visual clairvoyant and I'm also clairaudient. Other types of psychic abilities I'm not particularly good at. But everybody has certain natural talents, you could say, and things which are more easily developed than others. And it depends a lot on how your the chakras, the energy centers in your body are configured and how active they are. For example, if you have a particularly active throat chakra, you will find you will tend to be more clairaudient. If you have a particularly active brow chakra, the third eye, you'll tend to be more visually clairvoyant or more psychic, depending on how you're wired. So, and it's a good idea, as you say, to go, you know, go with your natural talents and develop those first before you branch out. But I think anybody, you can develop any type of ability if you set your mind to it. But it makes sense to focus on your natural talents first.
Mm-hmm. Wow, this has been a fascinating conversation. Is there anything else in your new book that you would like people to know about to... I mean, I get that it's smaller and it's more, you know, streamlined and it's got some added features in it that didn't have, but is there anything else that you think would be worth discussing so that people get a sense of why they'd want to get your new edition?
Well, the book is absolutely wonderful, if I don't say so myself. I'm sitting here kissing it. It's my new baby. It's beautifully done. I can't see myself changing that any time in the near future, what's in there. It is very, very accessible, the knowledge inside of the book, and giving you a good sense and a feel of what astral projection's like and how to achieve it. And the techniques in there are very, very good. The energy work, the manifestation work, and the astral projection techniques are all fitted beautifully together. They flow very well together and make it much more accessible and easier to follow as a workbook to achieve an astral projection. On that note as well, I've got another online workshop starting up on the 21st of January. If anybody's interested, have a look at my website, which is astraldynamics.com. And apart from that, thanks for having me on the show.
Oh, you're welcome. You're always a delight, and you gave us some really interesting and unique concepts to think about. And I'm always honored to have you on.
It's a pleasure, Laurie, as always.
All right. Take care.
Bye.